From the rolling bluffs of the Driftless region to the pristine shorelines of Superior in Michigan, from the Northwoods to the Kettle Moraine, Civic Media broadcasts across all of Wisconsin.
For all of Wisconsin.
Take a trip with us across the radio network to hear from communities throughout the state. This is the Civic Media Spotlight.
Throughout this hour of Civic Media Spotlight, we highlight excellent morning show content from across the Civic Media radio network this past week. Kicking off the hour, we head to northeastern Wisconsin for a conversation with Meinau and the mayor, where they were joined by the vice president of the Wisconsin area music industry, Ron Brooks.
Coming to Northeast Wisconsin live from the Civic Media Studios at the City Deck Landing in Green Bay and featuring TV and radio broadcast veteran John Meinau, along with the City of Green Bay's longest serving mayor, Jim Schmidt. This is Meinau and the Mayor. Begin the day with a friendly voice, a companion unobtrusive. And here are your hosts, John Meinau and Jim Schmidt.
Thank you very much. Welcome back. Meinau and the Mayor here in a good look. Look at us, 53 in Oshkosh, 52 in Appleton, 49 in Green Bay. How high is it supposed to get, Todd? You know?
I don't think it gets much. Not a great week, but then did you see it's going to be like 78 on Saturday or 76?
Really?
Did you see that, you guys? I think it's that nice.
Well, they're saying 67 today.
Okay, well, that's good.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Yes, 73 Saturday. Wow.
I know. That.
Hope I have my bike by then. And my biker. I'm getting it. You know what I'm getting?
Please don't say that. Nope.
What's going on?
He's going to say he's going to wear those biker shirts.
No, listen
those
to me.
Guys who want to be. That is.
Well, he found something out yesterday. Remember what you found out? Tell the story.
I'm getting padded biker shorts.
Oh, yeah. Those. Wow. You're going to look
great. I'll tell you
what.
I think I'm going to look pretty hot in them. I'm not even kidding.
Boy, those are...
And he'll be sitting right next to you, Jim.
I know.
And if anybody gets a kiss cam, you'll be right...
No way. I'll be
and you know what? You know what we're going to do, though, when I first get wear those here? You know what we're doing? Huh. Another round of leg lifts.
Oh, hey, that was...
We are. We are. I'm serious. I beat you.
No, Todd.
Yeah, because I didn't want to get fined by Todd the $10. So I jumped up. Exactly.
I don't think so. Hey, Ron.
Good morning.
You know, Ron.
Ron Brooks is here from Whammy.
Right. And so the Wisconsin area music industry, right?
Yes.
And you recognize the artists in how many categories?
We have a little over 80-some categories now.
And we're going to go through all of those this morning. Yeah.
And the nominees are.
But unfortunately, we don't present all of them at the show because it's just not enough time.
And eventually, and I'm setting some things up, some meetings, and Johnny and I and you, of course, Ron, we're going to have a bricks and mortar place because I know you guys, and thanks for sending me that email, but... We love the music and the arts. I mean, we have people on here every Friday that are...
perform live?
Are they up and coming or what?
Dennis, my good friend.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
he was in a band with me, by the way.
Really?
Oh, really? Absolutely. Yeah. I'll bring a photo of you sometime with the really big hair.
You know what,
though?
It's funny. I think every local musician has played with a different look at some point in their career.
You guys get along.
Do you know Ramona? Ramona and the Flower?
I can't think of her band name.
And she was here and she started... And Dennis, like we played together. We're in the same band for a while.
Who knows? It's
such a family of you guys interacting with one another, aren't
it? That it is. I can tell you that at the awards show, there's going to be a whole group of musicians where we all know each other from around here that are going to be hanging out.
Awesome.
Do you give a category in different types of music? Right, jazz.
Correct.
I got to ask: is there polka in there?
Yes, there is. Well, that's such a big part of the culture here in Wisconsin that to omit polka would be crazy.
Yeah.
But the way the award system or the voting system works, the musicians actually self-identify what their categories are.
Oh.
So,
well, you probably have to these days because country and pop are so close.
You look at Jimmy Buffett's going in. I mean, even when you go to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland, there's not the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, the Country Music Hall of Fame in Nashville. Uh-huh. I'm surprised to see Simon and Garfunkel in there. It's like, really?
Really? But, why not?
I don't know. I just don't see those guys as country.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
They probably have been covered by a country artist on one of their songs or so.
Right. Do you have the big question he's trying to work his way into? Do you have barbershop quartet categories?
Jim, I happen to know who is on the running list for Hall of Fame. The Schmidt brothers are on the list.
All right. Yeah. All right.
So one of these years.
Okay. That's fantastic.
That's all right. Just let me know how much. And
yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, that's, and I think we do, as I said, sometimes we get a little bit overshadowed with sports, and that's okay. We love sports.
Well, this is a town with a football problem.
And we're going to try and get the NFL draft is going on. There's some people from Green Bay out there because we host it next year. So we're going to get somebody and talk to them this week about how it's going out there. But yeah, I think it's great that you recognize the musicians, the artists in this area. And is it the whole state of Wisconsin, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and that's a really tall challenge for the state because geographically, you know, if you're in Milwaukee and somebody is in Duluth, that's a long way.
Right.
It's not a fun drive, you know. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's only 5 million people, and they all probably, not everybody, but a lot of people do something in music. And I think the interest in your, I think, I'm not saying everybody can play or sing, but there's more musicians than there are athletes, I would think. I don't know that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, the big part of it, when you're in school, if you participate in any school music, is learning how to be part of a group. So it kind of goes naturally. When you think of all of the bands and the groups that started when people were in high school, you know, that's what we used to do to stay out of trouble, I think.
You know what's really cool, though, too, is when we're talking about these local artists that come through, it's really cool how, like, somebody like a Dennis Peters from the Glam Band, okay? Mm-hmm. He's got this young group that he's really encouraging, and they're called Decades, and they're 14, 15 mm-hmm. years old. There, you guys aren't afraid to share and to mentor and to encourage young up-and-comers. It doesn't seem to be like this jealousy thing of, oh, threatening. I think that's cool.
Yeah, you know, they all talk about pay it forward and that kind of stuff. But, you know, even my generation of musicians, we were looking up to other musicians. Right. And, you know, we would be at different venues and go, man, I wish I could play this place. That would be just awesome. My whole career would be made if I could play here. I have a whole list of those. So I've played most of them, thank goodness. But, you know, you look up to it and you aspire to it.
Right.
And there are always going to be young kids that are aspiring to be performers.
And it's cool when those people that they're aspiring to be take the time and the courtesy of helping them out, or at least just even, like I said, encouraging them.
Oh, yeah. I personally remember talking to people that were in local bands, and you really look up to those people, and you're inspired by them.
Exactly.
You know, every time somebody asks me for a drumstick or something, it's like, oh, man, here. Take two or three. Right. I'll even try and sign this round thing, you know?
Wow. Hey, what do you have a category for up and coming or
rising star?
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. That's cool.
That's pretty much limited to, we try to keep that to bands that are under 21. Used to be 18, but.
So that's gotta be tough to pick a winner. You know what I mean? Like who decides on, is it just voting?
It's
number
the membership
that votes. And then the top vote getter.
How do they see all of these?
Well, it's not the board that sees all of them.
Okay.
Really, when you self-identify, when you register at the beginning, then there's a series of votes that takes place. There's two series of votes.
Okay.
So it's really the membership of WAMI that decides who is going to be the winner.
Got it. Right. Okay.
All right. That's cool.
Except for the People's Choice category, which is just an open category that you don't have to be a WAMI member to vote in that.
Do we know the nominees for the People's Choice Award?
Yeah.
Can you tell me that?
Sure.
I would just be curious.
By the way, with Ron Brooks from WAMI. No, go ahead.
Sorry. And WAMI, as we're talking about, it's an area, the Wisconsin area music industry. But this industry, there's a lot of industries, but they really honor and put into a, it's not really a bricks and mortar Hall of Fame. It's more of an online Hall of Fame. And they induct people. We're going to someday build a bricks and mortar Hall of Fame right here in Green Bay. But right now, And this, when is the vote? When is the vote? It's coming up, right?
The vote is done.
The vote is done. When's the announcement? That's what I meant.
The announcement will take place at the award show itself.
And that's?
That will be May 19th, which is a Sunday. It will be here at the Epic,
yes,
Epic Center.
Yep. Right.
Uh-huh. In Ashwaubenon, technically.
Yeah.
Yeah, but nobody knows Ashwaubenon, so you can say Green Bay.
Is that one of the? Is that on the list of names to spell for cities on the way in?
It might be.
You know what? Yeah. I just went through Ashwaubenon the other night.
None of your damn business, Ron.
we're not cheating.
You're the music guy.
Yeah, so. Stay in your lane.
So the 19th, so who are some of the nominees for the People's Choice, which any of our listeners could vote on?
Oh, you can't vote anymore. It's all done.
I can tell you
some of the finalists
that
could be winners.
All right.
You're going to be happy to know that in the media award, Max Inc. Radio happens to be one of the finalists.
It's one of the shows that we have here on Civic Media.
All right. That's exactly right. Let's see. Another venue. We always have a People's Choice for a venue. Some of those would be the Appleton Beer Factory in Appleton,
Great.
Cactus Club, Fox River House, of course, getting into Madison, High Noon Saloon, Milwaukee, Kelly's Bleachers, here in our area, Country Bar, Paulie's Pub and Eatery, which is in Milwaukee, right over by State Fair Park, a place called Shotsky's, that would be the Northwest quadrant. And then Steel Tank, Rally Point, that's another place. The Wharf in Manitowoc. Waverly Beach in Menasha.
Familiar with that.
And then, of course, we have to kind of divide it up into the small clubs and then the concert halls, which, of course, the Alpine Valley, Fox City's PAC, Gibson Community Music Hall.
Oh, that's awesome.
The music.
Big-time places.
When we come back, I want to talk about the Hall of Fame.
Okay.
Because you've got the nominees or the people that are going in, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, we'll talk about that. We got Senator. Did you hear me sing earlier, Ron?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, okay. Leave it there, Ron.
Okay. We'll be back after this.
Mino and the Mayor is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on WISS and WGBW weekday mornings from 6 until 9. To learn more about this show and all of Civic Media's programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
Continuing on with this hour's Civic Media Spotlight, we now head to a segment from Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow, where Pat shares his thoughts on why the Republican-led Wisconsin legislature is holding up the funding that's already been passed for several important issues around the state.
I suppose it will not surprise you to learn that when you ask what's new at the state capitol, it will once again involve the majority party not in session, on a paid vacation for 9 months or so here, but are once again being an impediment to progress in our state. And it's not something that anybody should take any joy in talking about. I certainly don't. But you have to raise the point when it appears other people are doing just that. We're talking about Republican legislators who have worked so hard for 5 years to do nearly nothing to cooperate with Governor Tony Evers since he unseated Scott Walker, that along with firing a cabinet secretary and department heads and taking the governor's proposed budget bill and throwing it in the trash and writing their own bill rather than working together, they have also found many ways to block funds that, again, the governor and other reasonable people would be using to help others. Recall how last year the Republican-led legislature, through its Joint Finance Committee, blocked millions of dollars for pay raises for employees throughout the University of Wisconsin system until they were able to successfully blackmail the system into pulling back on some of its diversity positions and programs. More recently, we have seen how, despite continued efforts around Wisconsin to free up the funds, there's still not a dime that's been spent of the $125 million meant to address PFAS contamination in Wisconsin drinking water. Again, Republicans are just sitting there on the money, unless they can somehow, again, blackmail Governor Evers and the rest of the state into taking polluters off the hook and making it tougher for the DNR to enforce the people who are polluting our water. These same legislators are sitting on $15 million designed to go toward basically a healthcare emergency in the Chippewa Valley, where two hospitals abruptly closed. They just closed. And that $15 million that had been allocated by the legislature previously, but still hasn't been released by the Joint Finance Committee, could be going to help augment the health services that remain in the Chippewa Valley. But they're sitting on that as well. So you can imagine my lack of surprise when I saw the headlines that said, Republican-led budget panel objects to plans for opioid settlement funds. The money from the opioid settlement that is supposed to be coming to Wisconsin has been stalled. The headline in the Cap Times says, opioid treatment money stalled by anonymous Wisconsin legislator. And the Wisconsin Public Radio version of the story says, Republicans on the legislature's budget committee have blocked a plan from Governor Evers' administration on how to spend millions of dollars from a legal settlement with opioid manufacturers and distributors. In all, because of a national lawsuit against the pharmaceutical industry, Wisconsin, between now and 2038, is going to get $750 million total in annual installments. And again, recently, the Wisconsin Department of Health Services released a plan to how to spend the next tranche of money that they're going to get, $36 million in fiscal year 2025. The legislature could look at that and say that that is a sound plan. We have a huge problem with opioid addiction. We need the funds for recovery. Let's put that $36 million to work right away. Instead, they are sitting on the $36 million. And the way that they can do that through the Joint Finance Committee is all it takes is one member of the majority, and Republicans control that committee 12 to 4, any one of those 12 Republicans can object. And you don't even have to know who they are. One legislator can anonymously object to something, and the Joint Finance Committee will sit on the money until they decide what to demand from something in the administrative branch, whether it's the Department of Health Services or the DNR when it comes to PFAS money. Again, money that has already been designated. And yet the legislature added this extra step of saying, no, you got to come to the Joint Finance Committee every time, hat in hand, saying, Mother, may I, and we have to agree with what you're doing or we're going to dictate otherwise. And that's exactly what's happening in this case with the opioid settlement money. And the thing is, when the co-chairs, the Republican co-chairs of the Joint Finance Committee, noted that an objection had been raised, Senator Howard Markline and Representative Mark Bourne sent a letter saying that the DHS request is not approved at this time, but the letter did not outline the nature of the objection or any details of any future meeting they'd like to have, according to the WPR story. Needless to say, the folks over at Governor Evers' office are not particularly happy with that. One of his spokespeople put out, and I'm updating the numbers for today here, that as of now, Republicans are on day 57 of refusing to release crisis response resources to stabilize healthcare in Western Wisconsin. They are on day 295 of refusing to release funding to fight PFAS statewide, and we are now 2 days into delaying critical resources to respond to the opioid crisis. It's a very real problem, And needless to say, when people in the governor's office are saying that it's just outright shameful, they're right. They're absolutely right. Now, again, this is not to say that Republican legislators should feel like, you know, they should just roll over for anything that the governor or the executive branch wants. Far from it. If they would like to be collaborative, the invitation is there. Unless you're waiting for it to be, you know, engraved and the governor is supposed to, you know, serve it while dropping to a knee or something. But the door is always open to say, hey, can we talk about how we're going to spend this money? And by the way, as far as, you know, how the Department of Health Services writes it versus what Republicans would like to see, I think it's right to ask the Republican legislators, what do you know that's so much different? Where is your experience in this, whether you went to, you know, medical school or you're a trained counselor or whatever the case may be? Kind of like they're doing with the PFAS money and the DNR. Again, we know where the experts are. We know where the scientists are. We know where the people are that have boots on the ground and can inform the plan that DHS has written up for the opioid settlement. But somehow you know better, but you don't want to tell us yet. And what that tells me is that there isn't anything substantive to this blocking of the money. They will release it eventually. They objected to some of the spending last year and eventually tweaked the numbers a little bit. They're doing it just because they can. Because they can fire department heads. Because they can throw away entire budget bills. It's something that looks good to the base. Look how tough we are standing up to the governor. But I think to more and more Wisconsinites, they're seeing this is a legislature on a 9-month paid vacation that does not want to get anything done that would be for the benefit of Wisconsin. Joe Zepecki is next. You're up north.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow is affiliated with the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on select Civic Media stations weekday mornings from 6 until 8. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
You're listening to Civic Media Spotlight. To be sure not to miss out on any of the excellent programming across the Civic Media Radio Network throughout the week, be sure to download the free Civic Media app on your smartphone devices. Head over to the Apple or Google Play Store and download the Civic Media app by typing in Civic Media and take the network with you wherever you go. Up next, on this weekend's edition of Civic Media Spotlight, we head to the Chad Holmes Show, where Chad was joined by 7th Congressional District candidate Kyle Kilborn.
Chad Holmes Show on Bow Falls Radio, 98.9 and 1230, online at bowfallsradio.com, mobile devices and Alexa by searching WXCO, and on the Civic Media app. Expecting to be joined momentarily by Kyle Kilborn, 7th District Congressional candidate, running for the seat currently held by Tom Tiffany. He's not linked in with us quite yet. Hopefully there's no issues with that. Just resent the link to him, so hopefully he will get that and be with us in the next few minutes. Going to talk about the issues, obviously, and just last weekend, of course, after a very long delay. And again, the politics that we have seen in such an important issue such as aid to the Ukraine, aid to Israel, it's been embarrassing in a certain respect, the way that the Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, played the politics of this. And then finally, okay, we're going to finally do it, but the weeks and the months that were wasted before this bill was passed this past weekend to get some much needed aid, where over the last number of weeks and months we've seen the Russians be able to take territory and take the lives of so many Ukrainians. Again, the politics of this has been very disturbing, to say the least. So again, would like to talk about that and also talk a bit about nuts and bolts about a campaign in order to be able to be successful against an incumbent. And again, if you look at the records in United States politics when it comes to being able to knock off an incumbent, no matter what race it may be. It could be, you know, House of Representatives in this case, U.S. Senate, could be even for statewide offices or for state assembly or state senate. the numbers are very, very difficult. So we're going to speak to Kyle Kilborn about that. And I see that the congressional candidate for the 7th District has joined us. And first of all, Kyle, thank you again for coming on, and good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me back on.
Absolutely. And there's a lot to discuss, but I thought we would start off with maybe a little nuts and bolts, because obviously there's so many issues involved in running for office and to differentiate yourself against your opponent. But also, in order to get that message out, you need to be able to have the support of people within the district who are willing to give you small amounts of money to be able to spread the word. And I just saw, I think it was yesterday, that your campaign put out that it was a good quarter, the first quarter. That, and not only that, it's come from a lot of what you'd call average people of the 7th Congressional District. And that's vital, isn't it?
It is. It is. It sort of shows you the grassroots support that we have. You know, this quarter was great for us. We raised 55% more than we did the quarter before. And it comes from donors that are sending in their checks and sort of, you know, listening to the message that I'm telling and saying, yeah, that resonates with me. And so they're voting with their money and, you know, supporting my candidacy to take on the incumbent.
We have been talking to you during the course of this campaign. And I was saying it earlier in the program, all of a sudden you look and it's late April, and the calendar moves so very quickly. Over the months that you've been doing this, what's the biggest difference in your campaign right now that maybe that you've learned on the road or in your discussions with voters? How are you different as a candidate here on April the 23rd than you were when you first started this race?
Yeah. It's actually been a year since I started the race, and I've learned a lot along the way. I think for me, it's, you know, keeping true to the issues that are important to voters. And, you know, what I'm learning is, you know, it's the heart of their communities is what they're most interested about. It's schools, it's healthcare, it's hospitals. It's, you know, having those jobs so that people can sort of live in these communities and sort of make them a vital part of their lives. And, you know, making sure that the campaign stays focused on that and doesn't get distracted by what's happening in Washington, I think is one of the things I'm learning. I think on the other side, it's the infrastructure. You know, starting a campaign is kind of like running a business. You gotta have, you know, your website, you gotta have a way to take in money, you gotta have a way to sort of get your message out there. And that takes time and building that infrastructure. And so we've been very diligent about, you know, as the money comes in, spending it in the right places, being very efficient about how we go about spending that money and making sure that, you know, we're spending it on voter outreach and like making sure that we're getting that message out to the voters that need to hear it.
You mentioned a few issues that you've been talking about, and I want to start with, again, healthcare, and especially rural healthcare, because that has become even more important in recent months. It's hard to believe that in 2024 we are now living in a time where we're seeing these hospitals close down and people are forced to go hours and hours and hours for some of the most basic healthcare needs. As you look at this, maybe in a big picture way, what are you seeing? What are you hearing about the healthcare issues, especially for rural voters within the 7th, and maybe any ideas that you have on where we should be going with this? Because, again, it's really hard to believe that in this time, in this era, that we are discussing the fact that people have to go even further and further to get basic healthcare needs.
Yeah. That's one of the challenges of rural healthcare is that it's a huge distance. And so people have to travel farther and further away as these hospitals and clinics shut down. I think it's, you know, vital that we have funding that sort of makes sure that these hospitals can stay open. You know, when you have an ER that's in an urban center, you know, they have patients coming in all the time. Whereas in a very rural area, like, emergencies happen infrequently, but we still need that ER open and we still need those doctors that are there. And so, you know, part of that is making sure that the funding stays there to support these rural hospitals. I think the other thing is we've known that this was coming for at least a decade. We've had stats out there saying rural hospitals are, you know, on the verge of closing. They're not making enough money from patient care and insurance companies. And so we've done nothing about it for the last decade.
Along that same line, I think we could expand that to even education and other areas. And during the debate that we saw in the last week when it came to funding for Ukraine and for Israel, I saw some quotes. I think one was from Josh Hawley, who is a senator from the state of Missouri, saying that we shouldn't be spending money across the ocean and in foreign lands, we should be spending it here. And then somebody, I think, very wisely pointed out is, you don't just vote against the money that's going towards Ukraine or for other foreign allies. You vote against the money that would be going to Missouri schools or Missouri healthcare or United States healthcare. That it has to be, I think, specified that when you talk about these issues, we have to be able to fund some of these when it comes to education, when it comes to healthcare. And we see folks, and I would say that Tom Tiffany fits very much within the mainstream of that group, think that in the conservatives in the House of Representatives, that there has to be investment in these areas, correct?
That's correct. I think, you know, as we see from, you know, an incumbent like Tom Tiffany, is that he talks a lot of, you know, we have to fund things closer to home, but when it comes to it, he doesn't vote for that way. He you know, votes against the Infrastructure Act. He voted against, you know, anything that sort of is an investment in the community. And we just have to hold him accountable to that and, you know, ask our voters, like, is this what we really want? Do we want our communities to shut down? You know, school leaves a community, that community is basically done for. No one wants to go to a community where the school isn't funded. And so, you know, with the consolidations that are happening across the district, we see that. We see empty schools, we see empty storefronts. And, you know, that's one of the things we have to really, you know, challenge our incumbent about. I think for me, it's, you know, what I'm trying to get out there is a message of, you know, we need a new rural deal, is that, you know, let's start investing in, you know, adjacent industry that will help the community, that builds on what's already here. I like to think of the idea of forestry and farming. You know, those are two huge major things in our district. Let's talk about biochar, where we take waste products from the forestry industry and sort of help improve the soil for our farmers. And like that sort of is a new industry that will capture carbon and put in the soil, but sort of enrich the soil. We can talk about, you know, arts and entertainment. We're a huge tourism district. Mm-hmm. Like, how do we start bringing in more industry that will help support industry that's here, and sort of help grow the district that will sort of help provide for those funding that we need to keep our schools and hospitals open?
When we brought up the name Tom Tiffany, obviously it's always difficult to go up against an incumbent because, and I think as you noted in your press release yesterday talking about where Tom Tiffany's getting his money, he's obviously got some pretty deep-pocketed funders that make it difficult. But when it comes to engaging Tom Tiffany, in fact, I was talking to a colleague earlier today and mentioned that you were coming on the program, and he said, oh, I want to know how he's going to engage Tom Tiffany, because Tom Tiffany is saying these things and not doing basic, like you said. I thought that list of ideas, you don't hear that from Tom Tiffany. You hear about the southern border when it comes to Tom Tiffany. You hear about those kind of issues to basically scare a lot of folks in the 7th District. How do you go about trying to engage Tom Tiffany? Because that was a question that I got, and I thought I'd pass it on to you, because that's obviously, you want to talk a lot about issues and about positive aspects for the 7th, but at the same time, you do have to engage what the incumbent is and has done and what he is saying as well. How do you go about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to just sort of reflect his record and sort of remind voters, like, here's what he's saying he's doing, and here's what his record is. And I think, you know, one of the things we've known about Tom is he'll say he's for things like veterans, and then he votes against bills that actually help veterans. And sort of, you know, he says one thing and does another. I kind of think of him as, you know, two-tongued Tiffany, and sort of like, how do we think about making sure that his record is out there and accurate? And, you know, that's how I would approach it. It's just making sure, you know, he's being held accountable to what he's actually voting on. And I want people to sort of, you know, hear from me, you know, I am focusing on your needs. Mm-hmm. I am going to, you know, future-proof the district. And like, that's not stuff we hear from Tom. And so just, you know, holding up a mirror to what he's saying and doing, and just, you know, letting voters decide.
And something also in the last year when talking to you and following your campaign that you've been consistent about is talking to the rural voters of the 7th, because I think there is this tradition here now in recent elections where if you got a D next to your name as compared to an R next to your name, that there's a certain hurdle that you have to get over. In these discussions, do you have the sense that you are resonating with a lot of the voters that you're going to need in order to be a credible challenger to Tom Tiffany?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of times there hasn't been a D up here. And so that's part of the challenge is, you know, we need people to run at all levels in the district. And, you know, with the new maps at the state level, I think that will get excitement to people and bring them out to vote. I think for me, it's, you know, there is some hesitation. Oh, you're a Democrat, you know. I think it, you know, being honest to my values, to where my sort of loyalties lie is with the voters and sort of, you know, having those conversations one-on-one, I see that. I see people, you know, I've talked to independents and they're like, you know, I just hate what's going on in DC and I'm so disgusted and, you know, disenfranchised. And I think, you know, saying, hey, you have a choice. You know, I am this alternative person who's not Tiffany, who's not in DC, who's not a politician. You know, let's talk and chat about the issues.
For folks that want to get more information on your campaign, what's the best way to do it?
Go to my website. It's kylekilbourn.com, which is KYLEKILBOURN.
Fantastic. Again, congratulations on the good report. Congratulations on the continued success on the trail. And hopefully we'll be able to talk to you again as we continue into this very busy and very important 2024.
Thank you so much.
That is Kyle Kilbourn again, candidate for the 7th Congressional District, Democratic candidate, joining us, hoping to replace Tom Tiffany as the 7th District Congressman in the state of Wisconsin. We're going to come back. More to come. The time is 8:48. Again, beautiful start here in North Central Wisconsin. As I look outside to my right here on our downtown studios, corner of Washington Street and North 3rd Street, 51 degrees under partly cloudy skies. I'm Chad Holmes. It is the Chad Holmes Show. Bow Falls Radio, 98.9 and 1230.
The Chad Holmes Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on WXCO weekday mornings from 8 until 10. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
We close out this weekend's edition of Civic Media Spotlight with a segment from the John and Gordy Show, where John and Gordy were joined by Lisa Guamnitz to talk about Fat Bird Week and saving our songbirds.
It's the word. Mad Radio, WNDX, 92.7 FM and 1580 AM. I didn't get it in the time.
I know. Yeah, we're talking birds this morning. Ah, yes. We're at Short Stack Eatery, 301 West Johnson Street. John and Gordy and our special guest this half hour, Lisa Guamnitz. You're with Save Our Songbirds.
Yeah.
Lisa, thanks for coming in.
Well, yeah. Thank you. What a great time of the year for bird lovers.
Is it?
It is. Birds are coming back, and they're building to peak migration, which in Madison is supposed to start around May 6th
yeah.
and run through about May 22nd. So this is the time to get out there, you know, have your ears on, have your eyes open, and just see the beautiful birds that are showing.
Okay, stop it with the...
That may have been a mistake to bring those birds, huh?
Lisa brought these stuffed animals that when you squeeze them, they're bird noises, right?
Yes.
Bird songs.
I think this is an actual live bird. I'm sorry about that.
What do you call people that are really into birding? Birdologists? Are they, or what are they? Are just they're bird aficionados? What are they?
Well,
bird lovers.
Bird lovers, bird watchers, and you know, there's a whole range. I mean, actually, one out of three Wisconsin adults identifies as a bird watcher.
Okay.
And that ranges from most people are backyard bird watchers. You know, they maybe got a feeder, or they just see the birds that are around in the back. But then there's people that increasingly, with some of the technological tools Sunset Show where people are reporting rare birds. Mm-hmm. Then you've got people that now are chasing birds, driving hours to get and more to get to see these rare birds.
Where do they hide out? Where do they migrate from?
Where do they migrate from? Well, some robins will stay here year-round. Others will travel a little bit further to the southeastern United States and then come back. And American robins were one of the bird species that did come back a little bit early this year.
Yeah.
A
little too early.
A little too early. So, but you know what? Fortunately, there's lots of natural foods around for them to eat. Lots of seeds. The black oil sunflower is kind of like the champ. It's one that, you know, most species tend to like. So that's a good place to start.
We were eventually feeding the chipmunks, which is not something we want to
do. Exactly. Well, you set up the smorgasbord for everybody, you know. Okay. So anyway. But, you know, the great thing is, so migration is underway, and Baltimore Orioles, which are, for many people, is kind of the sign of spring, they're starting to come back.
All right.
And the warblers are really going to be coming back in force in early May. And May 11th is what's kind of like opening day for bird watchers, you know, as there's an opening day for fishermen.
Sure.
And that's May 11th, and that's the World Migratory Bird Day. And so there's a number of festivals that go on to celebrate that. And one of the things that's timed for that is Fat Bird Week.
Yes, so that's where we're at right now, right?
Yes.
This is Fat Bird Week.
We're in the middle of Fat Bird Week. So Fat Bird Week started last Friday. And the idea is it's just a celebration of migratory birds and all that they do to get back here to Wisconsin.
Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, they're flying hundreds of miles if they're spending the winter in southern Wisconsin, but then thousands of miles if they're in Central or South America. And so they are packing on the fat, which is a lightweight fuel that'll bring them across. And, you know, as they're flying across thousands of miles, you know, if they're not flying, they're eating. So they're super busy. Mm-hmm. So we were inspired. Natural Resources Foundation is presenting this first ever Fat Bird Week, and we were inspired by the Fat Bear Week.
Well, I'll tell you, the first time I heard a Fat Bird Week, I was offended. You know, you're calling birds fat, and you know it's just a negative connotation.
But it's actually a good thing that they're fat.
It is a good thing.
A fat bird's a healthy bird.
Yeah,
a fat that's what I always say.
Exactly.
Are there places around Madison that people could go for bird watching?
Oh, sure.
What's the best?
Well, I think the Arboretum's pretty stellar.
Sure.
Yeah.
Pheasant Branch. Conservancy.
Oh, okay.
That's another great spot to go.
Right. Some of the parks.
Yeah, some of the parks. And, you know, we're lucky we've got lots of state parks within 30 minutes. Those are great places to look as well. Mm-hmm. Goose Pond. You know, we're really fortunate here in Wisconsin. We've got, you know, we have the Mississippi Flyway. So a lot of the birds kind of funnel up along the Mississippi River.
Oh.
Or they also come up the Lake Michigan coast. So we're seeing lots of birds either coming to Wisconsin and nesting here or continuing on up to Canada where they nest.
Have we seen a change in the birds that are appearing in Wisconsin because of climate change?
Well, I think, you know, they're thinking that the migration's happening a little bit earlier. And then also there are some species that are extending their range a little bit. And there was a big survey that was done largely by volunteers from 2015 to 2019. And there were some new species that were recorded nesting here in Wisconsin that 20 years earlier did not. So, yeah. So we are seeing some different birds. And then also, sadly, you know, we're seeing some birds that are, you know, getting closer to winking out, you know, because their habitat's moving up. The Connecticut warbler is an example of that.
Oh.
Conservation should be something everybody's concerned about. It shouldn't really have political lines to it, because environment and conservation is important for everybody and every species. So, you know, it's good that, I mean, at least we're tracking this and trying to do what we can to, you know, help preserve the bird population.
Is there plant life that homeowners can plant around their home in order to feed the birds naturally as opposed to just feeding them at a feeder?
Yeah, great question. Mm-hmm. And actually, the second part of Fat Bird Week, in answer to your question, John, is we have a webinar at lunchtime on Tuesday, April 30th, and the winner of the Fat Bird Contest will be announced then, but also we will cover four ways to help keep our birds fat and healthy here in Wisconsin this spring.
Excellent.
And one of the topics we'll be talking about plants that are good for birds.
Yes.
And, you know, they're plants that provide, that actually feed insects. So trees are probably the best. Trees and shrubs for birds, because they host so many different caterpillars. And 96% of our birds, our land-based birds, need to feed their babies insects.
Oh, okay.
And so if we want to have that next generation of birds, we've got to have a lot of trees and shrubs, native trees and shrubs on the landscape.
Well, Lisa, thank you for joining us this morning. This has been really informative. A lot of fun, too.
Yes. Isn't this great?
Thanks for having me. I can loan those to you. You can have them the rest of the day.
Wow. Oh, thank you. And again, your website?
Is wisconservation.org/fatbirdweek.
Thank you. Thank you. Back with more John and Gordy live at Shortstack Eatery.
The John and Gordy Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on WMDX weekday mornings from 6 until 8. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.